And hello, everybody. I am alive and awake, and I'm Chuck Horton. I'm bringing you live another episode of Double Cross Radio. I'm joined tonight my co-host Drew Lamb, my good friend here in Southern Oregon. Drew, how you doing tonight?
I'm ready to get out of this place.
That sounds like a title of a song. Something like that, I think, yeah, in the early 60s. We got to get out of this place. It's the last thing we ever do. Yeah.
It was at the animals. I don't know. Yeah, I don't think I was born yet.
And we are joined tonight by two special guests from Chile. One is Gabriel Shear, and the other is Luke. Luke, I apologize. I forgot to ask your last name.
Crowley.
Luke Crowley. There we go. And Gabriel and Luke are going to give us just a lot of information about what it's like living in Chile and all the pluses and minuses and the opportunities and the reasons why they're there. And before we go too much further, I think I should just say that, Gabriel, I'll let you speak first. I think they should maybe tell their story about how they came to arrive in a South American country and how they're liking it so far. So, Gabriel, go ahead. Start us off.
Well, about 2 years ago, I was living in Vancouver, and I was at the place where I just read Harry Brown's book, How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, and I was trying to figure out, how do I find my freedom? And so I was leaning towards getting an RV and just kind of doing the nomad deal, and around that time, that's when the ads for Galt's Gulch, Chile started to surface. That caught my eye, and it looked like it was right up my alley. So I decided that that's what I was going to do. I didn't really know how I was going to get down there, but that was the new goal. So I kept working and saving, and the Bitcoin wave was starting to rise. And the timing was just right, where I was able to buy a fairly decent-sized miner. And by the time I got it and set it up and fired it up, it paid for itself in the first 10 days, and then it paid for my plane ticket in the next few days. And then just as I was ready to leave, I was quitting my job and everything, a guy from Chile messaged me on the net and told me about this entrepreneurship program that was also based in Viña. And I basically decided that I was going to come down to Chile and do that first. So before going to Galt's Gulch, I went and spent 3 months at Exosphere.
Yeah, we've actually, I hate to interrupt you, we've actually talked about that briefly on the show when we had Jeff Berwick on the first time. He had very good things to say about Exosphere.
Yeah, I really liked my time there, and that's where I first met Luke. He was also in it. And so that's where we started to hatch these ideas and toss them around. And during that time, we went to Galt's Gulch while they were having one of their festivals. And it wasn't too long before things started to present themselves in terms of red flags. And once the Exosphere program was finished, I went to spend 3 months there at Galt's Gulch, basically just trying to help out in any way possible. They needed somebody to manage the website and whatnot, so I helped with that. And about halfway through my time there, I was starting to get a little frustrated with the fact that there was no one else there. It was very quiet. I thought, if something is this great, there should be all kinds of people who are buying in on site helping to build this. And there just wasn't. So I hatched this crazy harebrained scheme where I was going to basically take a structure that was already built and fill it with these Japanese sleeping hotel pods, kind of like the things that you find in downtown Tokyo, in an effort to attract young people who don't have very much money, but to actually get people in. And that fired up. I set up the website and started taking pre-orders, and it was going quite well. And then after a few weeks of that, the whole Galt's Gulch thing started to fall apart, and I was left in this awkward position of trying to figure out what to do next. And ultimately, I couldn't really stay there because of all of the problems, so it was decided that we should pick it up and move elsewhere. And that's when Luke called me up, and he offered to help bring us to a new site and breathe some new life into it. And I should probably turn it over because this is where kind of Luke's story starts to parallel with mine, and he can probably tell his side of it.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, my journey, if you want to call it, started a little earlier. It was basically in 08 during the meltdown. The stock market kind of got me interested in finances. Kind of had a little bit of time off of work. Kind of was like doing the internet search thing. Came upon this movie called Zeitgeist. Watched that, and that started me down, basically just nonstop searching. And I basically subscribed to everyone's site, and was basically into prepping, and was that's where I found Dollar Vigilante. And spent about 4 years kind of going round and round, just basically living in constant fear and confusion. And then finally I started to basically think, okay, how could I put a positive kind of spin on this? Because I was driving my wife crazy. I was driving myself crazy. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to go out and we're just going to do little vacations and kind of get the feel for being outside of the US, because I really didn't spend much time outside the US. I didn't really think about leaving the US at all. So we first started, we went down to Mexico and I absolutely loved it. And then we figured, okay, let's go a little further this time. And I contacted Jeff Berwick. I actually met Berwick in at an event in New York, and he said, "Come on down to Acapulco." So then I arranged to meet another guy from the Dollar Vigilante group, and we both we stayed in Mérida and Cozumel, and then eventually flew out to Acapulco, and that was about 5 weeks. During this whole time, I was in touch with a friend of mine, Luke Blackburn from Exosphere. And I said, you know what? This time I really want to go for it. And I'm going to go for 6 months. And I figured, okay, well, I'm just an electrician. I'm not a rich guy. So I got to find a way to kind of pay for my way. So I joined a site called Workaway, and I basically worked for people as an electrician, helping them in their businesses. So first one was in Costa Rica and then in Panama, and they were basically just hotel owners. And I fixed many of their problems, and I actually learned a lot from them as well. It was very good. And then, like Gabriel, I was very interested in Gulch Chile, and it was really like a bonus, because I was like, oh, I'm going to Exosphere, then I could see Gulch, and very excited. And that's when we first went down there, and I saw right away things weren't kind of adding up as far as the construction aspect of things. But I really didn't, I was like, all right, Gulch is just, they're starting out. I really didn't think of it. I didn't think it was really a total scam or anything. And then we got started with Exosphere, and we were busy for that for 3 months. And then I eventually And we learned a ton, and we worked together on various projects. I eventually went back to New York and was kind of like floundering. I didn't have a project. I didn't really have any direction. And that's when I saw Gabriel's project. I admired the ambition, but I realized he was probably a little bit out of his depth when doing the construction end. And I kind of kept my eye on it. And once I saw the whole project imploding and him catching all this heat from people, I contacted him, and that's when we partnered up.
Okay, so that puts you down at you're actually you probably are moving south a little bit and towards the establishment of Fort Galt. So let's tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this puts us at about August. And once we
This is
met
August
up,
2014.
yeah.
Okay, so it's just
And so,
recently.
So our first move was to set up a little headquarters on the beach and figure out what it was exactly that we were going to do. We started learning a whole bunch of software that we would need in order to show people what it was that we were doing. We hired a local architect to help with making models. All these foundational steps that one has to do when they're starting their own business down here that most people don't think of, that require a whole bunch of stamps and waiting in lines at offices and all that tedious junk. So the next few months was basically that preliminary foundational stuff. And then eventually, like, we had been scouting around different areas trying to find this perfect spot for Fort Galt to be built. And one of our scouting trips took us down to Valdivia, and we just loved it. So we decided we're going to move down here. And that's where we are now. We got a nice place down here. We set up, and we've been working. How long have we been here? Like 4 months, 5 months?
Yeah, about 3 months.
Three? Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a little while, and this is a really nice town. It's been a great place to work. People are all really friendly, and it's really easy to get stuff done. So that's where we are right now. We've been gathering members to the project. We're basically in this early phase right now where we're just gathering members that want to buy in. We aren't actually collecting any funds yet. We're just lining everyone up so that once we have enough support, we can pull that trigger and actually start to move.
Now, say the name of the town again. So,
Valdivia, VAL. Yeah.
Valdivia. Now that is located
It's
south
about
of.
a yeah, it's about a 10-hour drive south of Santiago.
So it's down there close to Patagonia.
It's towards it. It's not quite that far, but
Okay.
if you're familiar with central Chile, where Santiago is, it's very dry there.
Yeah.
Water rights were always a huge deal, and the land was always bound by environmental conservationist edicts and whatnot. So it was nice to move down here, where it's a lot more wet and lush, and nobody cares about water.
I understand. We come from Oregon is kind of a
Yes.
the western part of it anyway is kind of a wet place.
It's just like Oregon here. Yeah.
Okay, so I imagine they have a lot of the same kind of agriculture, and hopefully you don't have the same kind of soil problems as we have in Medford. But that's we have this thick, sticky clay. It's just horrible. It sticks to your feet, and you in the winter when it rains, you walk around in boots, and pretty soon you're about 6 inches taller than when you started.
Well, we aren't sure yet. We've only been here for a few months and the weather's been gorgeous, but we're told that it rains like crazy during the off season, so I guess we'll have to brace ourselves and see what the ground turns into.
Yeah. Well, there's always that. Now, for people who really have, and I imagine that most of you listen to the podcast, I've never been to Chile. I have no idea what it's like, but I want to know because it's one of the places that I'm kind of interested in perhaps living for a while. And so, in terms of things that people might be interested in, like medical facilities, how
Top
are those?
notch. Top notch.
Top notch.
Santiago has everything that any first world developed country has.
And probably
And
at a lower cost.
oh, definitely. And most things are privatized, so there's a lot more free market competition.
Yeah, like my son went to have his teeth worked on, and I did as well in the same building as Exosphere. And he got brought right in. He fell in love with the dentist because the dentist was very attractive, and he got his teeth worked on, and it took a few days, and it was not a lot of money, and she did a great job.
That's my experience out of country is getting some dental work done in Poland was for about, well, for my wife and I, the total savings paid for our trip.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was pretty good work. So anyway, how about crime in that area? It's crime rate would.
Not bad. I mean, I think Chileans tend to have a bit of a reputation for petty stuff. Like, I was in a restaurant once and watched this nice old couple just nonchalantly walk out with some of the condiments and shit as if it was no big deal, which is a little bit weird for me, but there isn't any like violent crime or anything like that to be too concerned about.
How about like we would call it maybe the quality of life, environmental issues and things like that? Is it clean air, quality of the food, stuff like that?
The air in Santiago is not great, especially during the peak heat. It's kind of nestled down in this valley, so the wind doesn't blow the smog out very well.
It's
So
kind of like LA then.
I'm personally not a huge fan of living right in Santiago. And then if you come down here, it's a lot more common for people to burn wood in their stoves. So you'll have some smoke coming out of chimneys and such.
But it doesn't fill up a whole valley or anything.
No, not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, we.
I think there's one town called Temuco that's got air problems. That's a little bit north of here.
Okay. Otherwise, it's how many people live in this town? So just give people kind of an idea of population density or whatever.
I think it's about 100,000, maybe a little more. I don't.
So it's
It's
a major city.
a pretty big city down here. But it's a very small town. Like you just could walk everywhere. The buses are really good. A cab basically from our apartment into the center of town is like $3. It's just not that big, but it's a extremely beautiful area around it, which is very, very large.
That's a really good point too, is the transportation is so much better here than where I'm from. Like in Vancouver, they charge so much money just to get a license to run your cab that the rates are crazy. The idea of just hopping in a cab and going to get groceries or something is just unfathomable. Whereas down here, there's really no big deal. I mean, we walk to the store because it's close enough, but we have groceries to bring home, so we just jump in a cab that's right there for us, and we pay like what, $4? Something like that? Yeah. It's really cheap, so they're able to compete head on with the bus, which is pretty cool. And the
Yeah.
bus, I think we can get across town for $1 maybe.
Yeah, it's like 70 cents.
Yeah, it's really cheap.
So I spent a little bit of time in Ecuador last year in April, and I was amazed. A lot of people that have cars, in order to help with their gas bill or to make their car payment, whatever, people when they have days off will moonlight as a taxi, and they'll just drive up somewhere where maybe tourists would be, and then they'll look around and make sure nobody's there to catch them, and they'll just put up a little sign on their windshield, and you can go over, and some of them speak English, some of them don't, so you have to be able to. I had a business card showed where our hotel was, and then they would just tell me how much money, and we'd say yeah, and get in the car, and same kind of thing. It was very, very, very inexpensive.
Yeah.
I rarely paid more than $2.50.
That sounds about right, yeah.
So yeah, that sounds just about like my experience in South America. I actually really liked it in Ecuador, except for the fact that it didn't seem to me like there was much opportunity there. Because there's if you take the standing in line that you have to do in Chile, and you maybe multiply it by a week per hour or something, they're just really it's impossible for a lot of people to escape from their whatever level of economic situation they're born into. So they're kind of seems to me like they work real hard, but they don't get very much ahead, and they don't really have a chance, because they don't, if they take a day or two or a week off to stand in all these lines, they're going to starve to death.
Right. That's pretty much how it is in Chile. They don't make a lot of money from what we see. People have pretty tight budgets, and I think the salary is about $20 a day, approximately $30, I think, if you're very highly skilled. So yeah, they're not making tons of money.
However, it's pretty easy to start your own business, and there's a lot of opportunities for somebody who wants to seize them. Almost nobody has a decent website. Just something like shopping for land, which we're doing right now, is pretty complicated because they don't have a centralized system that lists all of the properties. So like just little problems like this that they're used to, somebody could come along and just solve them and make a fortune at. So there is opportunity for people that want to leverage it. Problem is there's a very deeply ingrained class system, so they're sort of conditioned to not pursue climbing beyond the social conditions that they're born to.
Yeah, I have either of you read the book The Other Path by Hernando de Soto?
No.
I think this was mainly about Peru, but it also involved Chile. Was very similar. There was a terrorist organization called, or revolutionary organization, I guess, called the Shining Path, and they were basically communists, and they were trying to overthrow the system because there just was no hope. And he wrote this book talking about how instead of being violent and using force, you should be pressing forward and taking these economic arguments to the politicians and getting them to make the country a freer market, not so much, not so I guess it was a free market if you got inside that bell jar, but everybody else was excluded from it. And so they're just going to lift that bell jar and let the air in, let everybody participate. And he was trying to streamline a lot of the business application things, the licensing, to reduce almost let people start. And you can kind of, over a period of time, you can qualify. You can kind of get a de facto or a after the fact license and just start operating, and no one's going to punish you and things like that. And they found that a lot of small little cottage industries started to happen, and it was actually made a difference in people's lives, and the Shining Path just disappeared. Because nobody, I mean, there wasn't all the problems they were trying to address were being solved. He also wrote another book called The Mystery of Capital, which explained why the United States was successful, and maybe the United States should have read, people in the United States should have read that book, because they seem to have just tossed the baby out with the bathwater, and they're trying to change things. They made things worse all the time, and they've increased the bureaucratic red tape and the standing in line, and it's getting worse and worse and worse here, while these other countries are trying to be emerging nations, are changing their economic systems, and they're becoming more and more prosperous. And Chile has one of the top economies in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah, I mean, down here, it's the opportunity that we saw was when we first came to Exosphere. We saw right away that we had a network on the ground, like immediately. And this is extremely important, especially if you come down for a short amount of time, that you could hit the ground kind of running immediately. So that's what something that we, an aspect that we wanted to bring into Fort Galt is, like, when you first come down, you don't speak Spanish, you don't speak Spanish well, you don't really know about the bureaucratic red tape, you don't really know the locals, you don't know all this good areas. And so this was a huge plus, just to show up and you have a group of people that kind of shows you the way right out of the gate.
So someone who had skills in teaching Spanish could probably go there and be tutoring people for money for quite a while if it becomes a popular expat destination.
Absolutely.
There's just probably all sorts of opportunities that people wouldn't even think are that great here would be awesome down there. I mean, the things that there's really a shortage of people who are qualified to do those things. And
Yeah, and there are certain areas where there's so much tourism traffic that if you just import something or, provide some kind of a service that's catchy, like, pretty much anybody can just set up a little kiosk on the beach and sell things to tourists, or, it's pretty simple.
okay, so I'm just making a case here for everybody out there that's listening to this either live or later on as a podcast, that if you've always said, oh, it's a rigged system, we can't, there's no chance to get in on something like this anymore, there are chances outside the United States that might be a lot easier for you to take, because you might have a unique skill set that for that destination that you choose that isn't overpopulated with people like it may be in the United States. So if you have IT expertise, and you're competing with people from India and Pakistan and all over the world for jobs that seem to be few in number. Well, you go to a country where they're not attracting anybody like that from out of country, and they're screaming for people like that. And it may not pay as much as it does here, but the cost of living is much less there.
Yes, like we spend about $500 each a month, approximately, and obviously you could spend more. I mean, if you went out to dinner and did the tourist tours, and we don't have a car, but we live very well. We have a very nice apartment. All the bills are paid, and it's about $2,000 a month for four people. The thing you talked about with people coming down and starting a business, I would really recommend Workaway to kind of get your feet wet, working with other people that are actually running a business in the country while you save money staying with them, or, you know, coming down just for a few weeks and talking to people that live here. But of course, trying to network before you come to whatever country you want to go to in advance, so you can kind of get to the feel of the country and how it's actually like to live there in reality, faster.
Yeah, and I think this is similar to, we had James Guzman on. I don't know if you guys know James.
Yeah, I know James.
Yeah, we had him on a couple months ago, and he gave much the same advice. This is it, you know, having some people there before you get there are really helpful. But even if you don't, when you get there, there are people there that are very willing to help you get settled and started, and can help you contact people that may be able to, put you in the right direction. And there's a lot of people that sell services that can be very helpful to you that aren't very expensive, and you can avoid a lot of costly mistakes. And there's always people there that want to help you if it's good for them too. So that's been his experience, and I think he's doing okay. He seems like he's very happy where he is. So,
yeah, well, James speaks Spanish, so he has a leg up on that in that department. I mean, it's a lot easier. Like, my wife speaks Spanish. She's Puerto Rican. And it's extremely necessary if you're coming down to Chile to speak Spanish for you to have an easier time. I mean, yeah, you could wing it, of course, and stumble along. But it's a lot easier if you have that have that skill, or if you know someone that could help you in that department.
Yeah, and I want to point out, this isn't just a plug for Rosetta Stone, but those people that designed that course, that's a self-teaching method to get you to conversational level in a relatively short period of time. You have to dedicate yourself to spending about a half an hour a day every day, but you can progress really fast. I recently got engaged in another business activity here, so it kind of slowed my progress down, but I was amazed at how fast I was picking up Spanish, and I still can understand quite a bit when people talk. I just have trouble talking back because I have trouble finding the vocabulary to, you know, I know what most of the words that they use mean, not all of them, but I kind of get the context that they're being used in, what they're saying. It's hard for me to respond or have a discussion with them. I just can't find the right words. I'm still thinking in English. And so I imagine if I were to apply myself to about six more months of it, I would be doing the thinking in Spanish that I need to do to have a conversation. So that program works really well. It's relatively inexpensive. You can purchase it. I've seen them on sale during certain periods of the year for less than $200. And, I think it works great, and you can have that for other languages besides Spanish. I mean, if you are going to, I don't know how, Thai might be a little harder to learn. I don't know. I have no idea. The letters seem a little more complicated. But I think there are many places around the world where you can live. You don't have to be in Chile. I've heard a lot of good things about Estonia. I've heard a lot of good things about Switzerland. Still, Switzerland, I think you have to have some money to go there. But there's other places where you don't. And I imagine that the experience that you guys are having is similar to what a lot of expats are having in different countries around the world, that, wow, life here is, it fits me, my lifestyle, my ambitions, my wants and needs much better than where I was. Is that a fair statement?
I mean, the cold, hard reality is you do need money to if you're going to be traveling for a long period of time, and you need a game plan and you need a network. I mean, these are just what I found to be 100% true. If you're going to try and start a business, it's not always easy, and you kind of got to have the right idea and the right product to be selling to the locals, because your idea, what they want, may not be what they want. And
Yeah,
I
and
found that doing these month-long trips, or 2-month-long trips, are pretty good, because it gives you a good feel. And staying in a normal apartment, not like a touristy type hotel environment, and hanging out with as many locals as possible. Because, like, for instance, like, you could take Rosetta Stone, but they don't speak actual Spanish here. They speak Chilean. So it's like rapid, like machine gun fired Spanish with cut off endings, and it's very tricky. Like, I'm a lot of times I'm completely lost when in Mexico I found I was picking up a lot more. So it's pretty tough in that area.
okay, so that's a good thing to know, actually, that it's kind of like a real like a dialect almost.
Yes.
Okay. Let me move on a little bit. I just had this is kind of an editorial comment, but we've kind of been speaking to this a little bit, but I said, like, the United States is not, I don't even think they're in the top 40 anymore in terms of economic activity and the economic freedoms. Chile, I know a couple of years ago was ranked number 10, and I don't know if these ranking services, how accurate they are, whether they should have been 7 or 12 or whatever, but they're definitely along. They were quite a bit ahead of the United States at that point, and I think they've stretched that lead out, in my opinion, just from looking at how much or how many products are exported to the United States from Chile every year. It seemed to be extremely good quality for a very reasonable price. I recently talked with somebody, I believe you guys know, Brian, who's trying to become an exporter of Chilean wines in the United States, and
Brian.
he's got a one of the wines he's marketing. I'm not sure exactly what the end price is going to be, but it won the best wine of the Southern Hemisphere 2 years ago. And I think that's probably a pretty good wine, I would think, and so they definitely have high quality products there at a much lower price than they would be if they were produced like in the United States or in France or and so that tells me that something good is happening there, and that it makes the statistics more real to me, because I see these products that come in the organic fruits and vegetables, and just there's a lot of good quality food that's coming from there. So those are good things to me, or good signs, signals to me that Chile has a good economy. They probably isn't
It's
perfect, but it's.
not very balanced. I mean, they have good cheap exports in terms of wine and produce, and they're basically the whole country hinges on exports of copper. So as long as copper's doing well, which it will be because everything's going electric and Tesla's making all these new battery factories and stuff, so I think copper should be fine for a while. But imports are kind of the counterbalance to it all. Like cars, electronics, stuff like that is generally twice as expensive here.
Okay,
Because they,
I ran into
yeah.
in Ecuador, I ran into that same fact, and it was because of tariffs. And they
Right.
were, I think they were trying to protect fledgling industries in Ecuador, and probably the same thing in Chile. I don't think it's working. It
No, and
never works.
some of them don't make a whole lot of sense. They tax the snot out of books, for instance. So buying a physical book is not normally done here. It's a lot more common to download them.
Yeah. They told me that if I wanted to move to Ecuador, don't bring any Bose speakers. even if they're old, they'll charge you like triple what you paid for it, maybe quadruple, because it's what the market is now. They don't care how old they are. Don't bring They told me certain companies that the tariffs on those products were just out of sight. And I said, oh, that's interesting. I don't think that they would. Well, that would probably be a pretty high tariff for an Apple computer, probably, things like that. It's, and that was Ecuador. It could be different in Chile. But cars were really expensive there. And that's why I couldn't understand why, or I could understand why people might be out trying to make a little extra money as a taxi every once in a while. Because they, I mean, it was about twice as much as the United States, pretty close to that.
Wow.
So I can say that. And I know that the standard of living in Ecuador is quite a bit lower than it is in Chile. So.
Yeah, there are two tax-free ports here, too. One's at the far north end and one's at the far south end. So if somebody wants to put up with the inconvenience of living all that way away from the center of activity, they could set up a pretty interesting import-export firm, but you have to be willing to be way out in the middle of nowhere.
Okay. Well, in the south, the weather gets pretty brutal in the winter, in your winter months, I understand.
Yeah, if you go far south enough, you can find some penguins and glaciers and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, moving on, for those of you who might be interested in living out of country, Doug Casey, we've talked about this briefly on previous shows. He has a four flags theory. And the main idea is that you're going to have one flag where you live at the present time, wherever you're living at the present time. And that not necessarily is a permanent place. It can be very temporary. But it will probably evolve over time into the place where you spend most of your time. It'll be your favorite place. But you might have other places where you stay from time to time. And so that would be your number one flag, is wherever you happen to be living at that time. The second flag would be where you do your banking, and it doesn't necessarily, these aren't necessarily in order of importance, or just how I thought of them as I was trying to remember them. When I first heard this theory, I said, well, I guess that's important because you can't do banking in the United States. You have to have a secure banking system. And you know, for instance, I wouldn't want to be banking in Argentina, but if I wanted to live in Argentina, as Doug does, you could bank in Uruguay and still satisfy that and be close enough to your bank where it isn't an inconvenience to go and visit them for things that you need. And at the same time, you wouldn't have to, you know, have sleepless nights about things. But now that the FACTA laws have been passed, it's going to be pretty hard for anybody to find a bank that will accept somebody with a U.S. passport as identification or under some kind of a, you know, like the equivalent of a green card from the United States, because they have to supply all the same information to the American government that the American banks have to supply. And American banks are basically just spies, unpaid spies. They have to give all this information to the federal government about what's in your bank accounts all the time. And yeah, they're trying to take the expats and find information on them all around the world by enforcing these same laws on the banks in these other countries. And a lot of them are just responding by telling their American customers they have to find a new bank. So that might be something that you might want to look into before you pull a switch and, you know, and jump somewhere, is make sure you have a way to get money. If you're, you know, have a business in another country and you want to get it into, let's say Chile, for example, you might have, make sure you have a way to move that money, without having to pay exorbitant fees because of, you know, you have a U.S. passport. Like, you can do that by gaining a second passport, which might be seem kind of expensive. It might cut through a lot of red tape. You might, if you're a single guy or a girl, you might marry a local. if you find somebody that you care about, and then you don't have to worry about that anymore. You might have be married to somebody who has kind of a dual citizenship thing, that you can get a passport from a second country without having to do too much. I have been married to somebody from Poland, so you know, she could open a bank account without any problem. and we could just, you know, work that way if we needed to, from my personal case. But certainly it's something that if you're going to move somewhere, you might want to really do some research and find out what's going to work best for you. You might, there are other places you can go on the internet and you can find information about this. And I really don't think they're too interested in people that are going to go somewhere and retire. And if that's what you're thinking about, you probably don't have to worry about all the stuff I'm talking about right now. They, if there are American branches of different banks in a lot of these countries, and you could probably work through one of those, and they're not going to bother you too much. But the, if you're doing some, if you're doing something really entrepreneurial and you stand a chance to make a lot of money, you certainly don't want the United States to come down and take 30% of it, or 39%. Excuse me.
Absolutely. And I don't think there's any one-size-fits-all plan for that. You have to really determine what works best for you.
Yeah. And so I think that's probably, maybe that's why I thought of it second. That's probably the thing I would be worried about the most, is making sure I was able to do financial things that I needed to do. Because that can be, I mean, you could have a whole bunch of money sitting in one place, and if you can't get access to it, what good is it doing you?
Yeah, I mean, that's why, that's the whole, that's one of the benefits of what we're doing, is we're going to have about 100 plus highly intelligent people all together in one spot coming up with very creative solutions for all these problems. I have no doubt.
I believe you. I think that's, you know, that's, and I think the emergence of Bitcoin is really a great solution to a lot of these problems, because it kind of, it makes banking kind of like something that's going to end up in a Smithsonian exhibit someday.
The better.
Yeah, yeah. Like we have a friend. We have a friend from Exosphere, Hernan, who's Argentinian, and he said that Bitcoin is huge in Argentina. Even people that are not like tech savvy love it. So, you know, these
they can't trust their banks at all.
Yeah, I mean, these problems that the governments cause actually create opportunities. And that's really what we focus on. We focus on the opportunities.
So if I could jump in here for a second. Luke, can you describe the Fort Galt project a little bit? You know, the physical plan of what you guys want to build. You're citing real estate now. I've been on the website. It kind of reminds me of Timberline Lodge. You know, kind of the look and feel of it. Very beautiful. Right. If you could get into what this is going to, what it's going to be like. And there's other, there's like maker space I've seen for entrepreneurial projects and things like that. And you're also, it sounded like, you're selling the suites. It's kind of like a condo project.
Yeah. Like Gabriel said it best. It's basically like the, tiny home, trend that's going on, and we're basically combining a bunch of tiny homes in one larger spot. But it doesn't have to be a tiny home. It could be a large suite or a large place as well. But basically, we take every aspect, whether it be the super high efficiency walls that Benson Wood makes, the wall and roof components, and he also has raised floors for ease of mechanical installations. And all these ideas that people are doing, and we just basically adapt them to the building and the project as a whole. So the final design may look completely different than what you see now after we get all the facts from everybody, what they want to do, and then we bring all these ideas to Benson Wood, and then I work with them. I'm actually going to be going to New Hampshire in about 2 months for the Pork Fest event that Free State Project throws. And I'm going to stop by Benson Wood for a preliminary meeting to kind of go over his basic concepts and basically what they have available to put this building together.
Well, this project looks more realistic than the Gulch project, you know, you know, I was looking at that and I was going, well, this is really cool what they're putting together, but there aren't very many people that are going to be able to get enough cash together or Bitcoin or whatever to buy into something like that, you know, to have a tens of acreage of farm and that sort of thing. Looking at the pricing or proposed pricing, it looks very realistic for somebody with modest means to buy into it.
Yeah, like a lot of people don't realize when they buy, they say, okay, well, I'm going to buy land in a foreign country. Okay, well, that's great. But the reality is, okay, you got to buy the land. Then you have to find a contractor. Then you have to get water and plumbing and septic system or be hooked up to the waste lines and fiber optic and all these things that they don't realize about. And who do you trust to build your house? And then who do you trust to watch your house after? Because there's been instances of people having their house and their property kind of taken over by people when they're away. And you have people partying in your house when you're not there. So we basically look at all the problems and what Gulch had going on. Gulch Chile had going on as well. And we basically decided to do the opposite and bring in all these solutions from the very beginning and try and make it as easy for people as we possibly can.
And we're also making sure that everyone who joins is very much involved in the whole process. So when people buy in, each square foot that they buy comes with a share of the overall project. So everyone has a stake in it. Everyone has skin in the game, right? And as things unfold, they all chime in with their own ideas and creative solutions to problems, and it all just takes on a whole new image depending on what all of these members bring to it.
So, talk about Gabriel for a moment. The maker space, if you could describe that and what that's all about.
It's kind of the heart of the whole project because we're trying to attract entrepreneurs and people who make things, who come up with creative solutions to problems, who have ideas for products and services. So to center it around a shop with tools seems like the most logical way to attract these kinds of people, and so far it has been.
Yeah, I would just
Fascinating.
echo that one of my summer jobs when I was going to college was working as a just a laborer on a construction site. And I got humble real fast and I realized how much or how creative and how great of problem solvers a lot of carpenters and plumbers and electricians are, as they really they were much better at dealing with these things than I was. And of course, part of it's experience, but they're very creative, and gained a huge respect for the people that worked in construction. So yeah, that's those kinds of people that are problem solvers are also builders.
Yeah, I started as a railroad, a concrete laborer for the railroad business in New York City when I was 18 years old, and eventually became an electrician. And I would have to agree with you. These guys, they use a lot of common sense and a lot of tricks to kind of get things done that someone first coming into the business wouldn't realize.
Yeah, to me, even when I eventually became an apprentice carpenter and I became a journeyman, I'd limited success for my experience, but I really, really, really respected those guys that have been doing that, in that construction field for 20 or 30 years. They could just work circles around you and hardly look like they were moving.
Right. I would always laugh like an apprentice working with me, and he would be like struggling, whatever. And I'd be like, all right, do you want me to give it a shot? And they'd be like, all right. And then most of the times I'd fix it in like 2 seconds, and they just like lose their mind, And I had that happen to me, of course, many times coming up in the
Yeah,
business as well.
and that's it was amazing how simple things are once you realize what the tricks are. It becomes easy and simple, and you just kind of order your thinking into the certain way that you need to put something together. And then when you see things that aren't done that way, you just say, "Oh, they didn't straighten their walls before they put the roof on and stuff like that."
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, it's that's great. I want to finish up the four flags real quick. Number three is just places where you would earn money, or we could produce wealth. And it doesn't have to necessarily be in the country where you're living, but it probably would be. But it could still be back in the United States, even if you were here. You might have a house that you didn't want to sell because the property values just might be low where you are. You could rent it out and accumulate that money in the bank, and every 4 to 6 months, you know, send it to your bank in South America or in Thailand or somewhere, whatever, in Mexico, whatever, wherever you end up, so that, you know, that would be where your number three flag would be, is wherever you have a source of income. And it doesn't have to be just rental income. I mean, you can have a production plant, you can have investment groups, you can have I think what Luke and Gabriel are doing down here at Fort Gault is really exciting. I mean, that is really, really exciting. I might come down here and visit you guys soon. And the fourth is, like I said, I alluded this a little bit with the banking, is you may need to have a second passport. The United States isn't the country it used to be in terms of how people see us. And it isn't so much that they hate Americans as everywhere I've gone, I've been really welcomed. But I think that they don't want to do certain kinds of business with you because it attracts the attention of the authorities in the United States, and they're very unpleasant. So,
yeah. And that's why the collaboration is so important when you have people coming together. I mean, we're all not rich guys here, and I know personally how these ideas all sound good in theory, but, you know, like, I have a second passport through my Irish, ancestry, but it wasn't easy to get. And usually the second passports, if you don't have something like that, are very expensive and they take a long time. So this is kind of like the working man's solution here. We're going to have all these people coming down here in one spot that you can be and basically solve all your problems in just one sweep. And you'll be living with these creative people. And I just like lose sleep at night thinking about all the different roads that this thing could take with the relationships and the projects that are going to start up. I mean, it's already amazing the people we have, and it's only about 25. And I'm like, we have another 100 people. This is going to be like the sickest place on the planet to live. So.
Well, it sounds incredibly exciting. I think Drew's kind of excited about this too. We recently had Travis Boyd on as a guest, and I think he's been in contact with you guys.
Yeah, he's a member.
He's a member. All right.
Yep. He's like my main man. That guy. I love that guy.
Yeah, Travis was on just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, oh, we need this. Let's see, we could do it this way, and it's something a big corporation would never think of because it's not in the book. It's not in their manual, and he's relying on experience. Oh, I know where a place is up on that mountain. We could just go up there and we could put a repeating tower and whatever. And so he built this network out of in basically a wilderness area. It's all just created a business that is now kind of, he's a partner with the government. So he doesn't like that very much. I don't blame him.
Yeah. And he'll be leaving one of the most beautiful places I've ever been.
Yes,
that region is absolutely gorgeous. So it's a shame what's happened to him.
But he says the area in Chile is also beautiful too. So,
It's ridiculously beautiful down here. And also too, like he's allowing us through his knowledge of telecommunications not to worry so much where we pick the location for the property, because he's assured me that he can get 100 megabytes per second or something, very high level to have at the fort. So he's actually a key player in that area for us.
Well, that's and I also understand that when he was at Anarcopolco that he was going around the hotel, he fixed all their wireless stuff there, so everybody's computers would work better because they didn't have them set up properly. And so he was just modifying all their feeds so it would work more efficiently. And the guy really is a smart guy. And he just walks in and looks at the system and tweaks a little bit and fixes it.
Yeah, well, the Mexico electric was so kind of funky. I used to take pictures of just the wiring for my personal amusement to put into a collection as like, you didn't think this was possible, using wires and knowing about physics, but somehow they made it happen anyway. And I would show the guys at work and everything, and they get it done over there. But the reality is, like, I stayed in the hotel. And a lot of switches didn't work, a lot of outlets didn't work. I mean, so, I mean, they definitely need kind of more highly skilled tradesmen in certain areas.
Yep, and it's he's going to be a real valuable addition, I think, to what you're doing. I think there's going to be more people coming down every day, and I think that this is probably a better way to start a project like this is from the bottom up, something that more people can afford, and you get a bigger slice of humanity with more, I guess, a more diverse talent base and everything. So I
Yeah,
think
and I mean,
it's genius that you guys do this. Gabriel, my tip of the hat to you, and Luke, a tip of the hat to you. It's excellent thinking on your parts.
thanks. We really just figured that the movement kind of needs a win, you know? I mean, a few things have been tried and haven't worked out so well, so we'd really just like to have something work that we can then play off of. Because, I mean, this looks pretty cut and dry. I mean, it's not a super complicated project. It just has to get done. And then once it is, we can sit back and go, okay, this works. We have a great group of people here. We're capable of doing pretty much anything. What do you want to do next?
Yep, that's exactly right. And I think it may be something that you can even be able to franchise. Who knows?
Yep.
It sounds good. There are other places in the world that are begging for freedom also, and or this kind of an opportunity. And they just need if they had a blueprint already in place, it makes it a lot easier for they don't. You guys have already gone through and made and corrected all the mistakes that they won't have to go through. So something like this could be valuable to sell as sell your experience to people, other people wanting to duplicate what you've done. I think it's just genius what you've done. So I hear the music. It's been a very, very, very fast hour. Thank you both for being such great guests and being on
Thank
tonight.
you. Yep, thank you.
Yes, we'll look forward to talking to you again sometime.
All right, be
Until
good.
next week, everybody, thank you for listening, and be sure and check our Facebook page and check out Fort Galt in Chile. Good night.